Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to my podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I usually upload once a week, and I usually put this link up on my Twitter, for the big Twitter followers, twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, one word. Also, the most efficient way of getting the show is to simply enter the iTunes search engine and put the name Warman Kickfighting Show or put the name Lord Gaul in, and my podcast pops right up. Lord Gaul was my username back when I first fell in love with kickboxing. Kakatugi USA, K1 Fans USA, K1 Fans, like, oh, those are the big forums. You know, now it's about Twitter, but back in the day it was about forums, and that was kind of really where I got my name out and really started pushing, you know, kickboxing, as more than just, you know, some hobby. It kind of became my life, and I really loved getting involved with conversations and so on, but little did I know that podcasting become a thing down the road. It did, and because we didn't have a podcast in kickboxing and Muay Thai, I figured, well, I guess I could make one, and here I am 6 years later, still doing this thing. So I've enjoyed it a lot. It's been a lot of fun, and I appreciate everybody that's been following me. So I want to go ahead and get into what I'm doing today. I have said over and over that I felt bad about failing you guys who are straight-up hardcore stadium Muay Thai fans. Like, if that's your thing, I have failed you, because lately, for those fights, because the names aren't, they're regular to the stadium visitors, but most of you guys aren't stadium visitors. The only way that you can get these videos, really, if you go to someone like a Muay Thai, which is who we're going to go to today, and go through the videos as they're uploaded. But even to realize and to know what a big event is kind of tough to get a hold on. But watching the fights, because a lot of them go to decision, it's hard for me to describe a narrative. Like, I could look at a glory card without looking at the glory fights and put a narrative together. I could do that for Kunlun fights. I could do that for Infusion fights. The thing that makes it a little bit more difficult for me for the stadium fights is I really want you guys to fall in love with it and know what it is. So I usually take my time and I break down what happens strategy-wise a little bit more, because it's different. The scoring is different. What they value is different. And how the techniques come together, it's just got a different rhythm and flow about it than you would expect or than you would see it in kickboxing. But I am determined to do my best to make sure that you guys fall in love with this, or at least give it a chance so that you would fall in love with stadium Muay Thai. And I think one of the best ways to do it is what I'm going to play with today. Today I broke down, I believe it's 10 fights, and they are all KO stoppages. So I want you guys to, this is this show, if you want to sit down and hear me break down technically how something very, very violent happened that led to a KO, this is the podcast for you. And I'm going to go ahead, and there'll be in different random orders, and I'll give you the opportunities to look for them. But first and foremost, hit up YouTube. Go ahead and press pause on this if you have to. But hit up YouTube, and then go to a gentleman who I quote quite often, Muay Thais. Thais like a necktie, but it's M-U-A-Y space T-I-E-S, Muay Thais. He does a great job of uploading stadium Muay Thai on a regular basis. He gets the big shows to us, and he usually gets the major fights, rounds 2, 3, 4, or sometimes rounds 3, 4, 5. Just kind of depends on how the flow of it comes down. But he is the guy who's really made this possible. So for those of you who are big time Muay Thai fans, Muay Thai guys, shout out to him. Muay Thai is the premier guy for that right now. I'd say right now, I think Muay Thai guy would also give credit to Muay Thai as well. But like, he does a great job of getting us stadium fights on a regular. I'm talking on a weekly basis, sometimes, you know, several times a week. So definitely we got to give credit to where credit's due. Muay Thai does a great job of giving us this stadium action. Now, once you are there, go ahead and go down to the bottom of your screen. I don't know if you're doing this on your phone or not, so it might be a little bit more difficult for you. But if I were to look at my computer screen, sometimes to bring up more videos, all I have to do is press load. So I'm going to go to Muay Thai's. It's going to be at his home. And then I'm going to click on videos. And then that's going to bring up all the things that he's uploaded lately. And there is going to be the area where I start to break down the fights. Like, that's where they come up. So giving you a chance to press pause, run over and look at that real quick, and then come back, and we'll be off and running. But I'm going to break these fights down. I'm going to go in random order, go down to the load area. The load area should include it, because these are all KOs that's happened around the last month, maybe month and a half for some of them, but around the last month. And I'll do my best to break them down technically so you guys can get a good idea of what I'm seeing when I break down films and why I love Muay Thai so much. So first and foremost, I'm going to go ahead and start off with a fight that it's got one of the cooler, it became like, I first saw it on my Facebook feed. When I first saw it on my Facebook, I was like, all right, I know this is violent if it's just going to press play automatically and I go down my Facebook wall, and it's good. There's a lot of stuff that sucks on Facebook. You'll get a lot of different, political views, or this person hates this person, that kind of stuff, whatever. But there's also some good stuff that happens on your Facebook wall. And one of the good things for me is I love it when a fight, especially a stadium fight, pops up. Because if a stadium fight pops up on there, it means that I'm either going to get a dominant, slick performance, I'm going to get an awesome war, or I'm going to get a brutal KO. It's only good news for me if I'm going down my Facebook wall and I see a stadium fight on there, because I know some violence went down. Sakmangkol Sor Samaya. The reason why I have to say the last name is, of course, because Sakmangkol is a very popular Muay Thai fighter who's always had a good career, but as you guys, for those of you who remembered when I had guests on before, and we've talked about stadium Muay Thai, it's been something that we've kind of discussed, in the past about how sometimes the names get repeated because they're popular, like Punjin Suk. There's a couple Punjin Suks out there. So it's important that you guys realize that this podcast will kind of go off of the narrative of what's happening culturally, and sometimes one of the cultural things is a really popular nickname gets used by somebody else. This is Sakmangkol from Sor Samai as he gets a very, very awesome KO victory over Diesel. So if you're looking on that, you're going to go Sakmongkol, and then it's going to go versus Diesel, just like a fuel, Diesel. Diesel, also a name I've seen a couple times. So the thing that makes this one really, really slick is it is a switch knee followed by a step-up knee, and it's about as brutal a knee as you're going to land. Rarely do you see a knee land, and then someone's legs go backwards after it's landed. Basically, this is the setup. You're going to see Sakmangkol back up. He's going to go ahead and extend both hands to play defense, basically meaning he wants to get his hands higher than the defense or than the opponent's guard. So that way, if the opponent is swinging, he can use the hands to interrupt. And he's going to do a switch motion like you would do on your pads, where some people, if you see this done wrong in a lot of classes, it's usually they do the walkover knee, the step up knee. Like that's just a walking motion as opposed to you switch and you stay in the same place. What you're going to see first is Sakmangkol is going to do a switch knee. After he scores the switch knee, he knows right away by the response of Diesel, who took that shot hard, that he could go back to the well because he knows that that was a big-time shot. Now it's time to go in there and clean the work up. The thing that makes it slick is the footwork. First, he's going to take a couple of distance-closing steps. Not much, just a couple of distance-closing steps. And then he's going to switch stance and do what I call a step-up knee or a walkover knee. Walkover knee just means you walk in the direction like you're like literally stepping. One leg goes from behind you to in front of you, like you're switching stance, and then you're going to deliver the knee. But unlike a switch knee, you usually stay where you are. But in a walkover knee or a step-up knee, you are literally going to move forward, and you're going to switch stance, and then you're going to deliver a knee. Sakmangkol does the switch knee, sees that Diesel's hurt, takes a small step forward to get himself a little bit closer to range, very subtly walks forward with that back leg, and then delivers a power left knee, the left knee that literally, it's like when characters get shot in the body in old school video games. Like his body, Diesel's body is like bent and flies away, and that it is a brutal, brutal knee. Awesome, awesome stuff by Sakmangkol. So make sure you watch that video. Now, all these videos that I'm recommending to you guys today, I think the longest one is like 6 minutes. I want you to take the time to see how awesome some of the violence is that comes with this. It really is some great stuff. Next fight I'm going to talk to you about is a low kick stoppage we were in the Rajas Stadium for the last one. We'll go ahead and stay in the Rajas Stadium as we are going to go with the fight is between Adam, just spelled like A-D-A-M, and he gets a low kick stoppage victory over Necheo. And Necheo is N-I-C-H-A-O. The thing that I like about this low kick stoppage, and of course I like all those low kick stoppages, but this one in particular is really cool to me. It's because it is a constant attack on the rear leg. It's something that I want to see a little bit more of, but it's crazy because I believe that Nacho, like, he'd smile after every low kick landed, like he was trying to mentally, you know, tough it out, like he was fine. But just Adam just kept scoring inside leg, outside leg, to the rear back leg. And then all of a sudden, at the very last low kick that he scores, which I thought at the time was an inside leg, but I think it got to the back leg, Nacho grimaces in pain. And this is at the end of round two. And he tries to smile it off. But it's like, no way, buddy. You got to figure out how to go 9 more minutes on that leg. So Adam comes out and just constant, you know, 1-2 goes to the back leg. Jab goes to the back leg, lets the opponent throw, and Nacho will throw a little bit, goes to the back leg. And the reason why that's a good leg to attack is because most people aren't used to getting kicked there. So if you see people, sometimes you'll see like some of the Holland drills that are really popular, it's almost always lead leg attack or inside leg attack. Rarely do you see someone attack the back rear leg. You've got to have a slickness about you, you've got to make sure your steps are right, because if they're launching there too, you're kind of in the range of it. So you've got to make sure you're really quick. You've got really good reads, or you can score when people are in the terms of an action. If they're moving, you might be able to get them. If they throw a strike, you might be able to get them after the strike. Adam did a good job of just pecking away. Inside leg, outside leg, combination, outside leg, combination, outside leg. And then after he got him hurt, and it looked like Nacho was going to go down, Nacho got into a series where he just started letting go some offense. And Adam didn't rush, didn't feel like he needed to rush. He knew that he had done the work to hurt his guy. And they got to the clinch a couple times, and there were some exchanges. And for a while, you're like, is Adam going to avoid, abandon the low kick? Bang, low kick scores, and that's all she wrote. Nacho was game, fought to the end. Not that he wasn't, trying. But he tried to put on that grimacing face. He didn't check any of the kicks until it was too late. And we knew at the end of round two what was going to happen in round three. So if you want to see a really good low kick stoppage, watch Adam go to work. And it's a complete leg work. There are times in it where he abandons the leg that he hurt to go after the other leg. Why is this a good idea? Because now you've got to try to defend both legs. One of those guys is going out. So if you try so hard to defend one of your other legs and you leave the other one open, that's just how this game's played. And next thing you know, you got no legs. And in this case, he was able to score effectively. Adam gets the low kick stoppage KO. Going to go ahead and move on to another KO here. I'm going to, like I said, I want to play with the order of this. They're all over the place on this list, but there are just some that I'm like, man, when I saw them, I go, this is going to be really fun to break down. This has got a lot of good stuff in it. And I'll make sure that I get you guys these KO results. Wachapon versus Bunchana is a great example of someone taking advantage of what I would call bad defense. So, Wachapon, Wachapon versus Bunchana, Bunchana. So you want to go ahead and look for that video. It's like 2 minutes and 32 seconds, not very long. So what you're going to get here is this. You are going to get Wachapon playing like a distance game. You know, they're playing like just your regular strikes and so on. What's going to happen is he's going to look for a strike. He's going to look to score offense. And sorry, everyone, there was a slight delay in there. I don't know if you noticed it, but I had to fix a slight delay. But should be back on track right now. So basically what I was getting at is Wachapon is going to, you know, pretty much, you know, look for distance offense. And what he's going to do is he's going to move his feet to close the distance quickly. What's going to happen is Bunchana is going to try to play a teep and then try to go back to his stance. The only problem with it is Bunchana gets a little bit too cute with his defense and he tries to play it while he's balancing. It's almost like a 3-point kind of deal where you've got right hand up, left hand up, left knee up or right knee up. Basically, you're trying to play defense on one leg while the other person's got two legs. Normally when people do this, if a strike happens, they just kind of casually go back into a different stance and then recover their stance. So if like somebody where I'm orthodox, if I were to play this in a 3-point kind of defense where, you know, I've only got one hand down and three are kind of focused on the sky, if you will, someone close that distance, I'm going to go ahead, ear muff up, and I'm going to put my lead leg up to prepare for a check. If nothing comes, I will gradually let myself float backwards into a southpaw stance. And when I got out of the stance, or when I finished in the stance, I'm then going to go ahead and go back leg. I'm going to move my right leg back. So as soon as I feel that I'm in that opposite stance, I'm usually safe. What I don't want to do is try to bounce on one leg. And that's what you're going to get here. Watcher Pond is going to close the distance, and he's going to look to throw offense with his hands. And Bunchana is just going to hop on a leg. And then when the offense comes, Bunchana doesn't put the leg down. He doesn't put the left leg down. He leaves the plant leg on. And then Watcher Pond is able to throw offense, and then I believe it is the left hand that scores the biggest shot, kind of the lead hand, the jab hand. That's going to come through and score big. Now, for those that don't know, a lot of the ties fight in the with the lead hand forward. So sometimes you'll see them look for the kill with that hand forward. So don't be surprised if you see someone hurt someone or stop somebody with the lead hook or lead jab. It is their power hand usually. But in this situation, it's just you can't think that you can play that kind of defense where you are, you know, balanced on one leg and you've got your hands up, you know, earmuffed up, if you will, and thinking that I'm just going to rely on the person to stop striking and then I'll put this leg down and I'll go back to my work. If they don't stop striking, you're in trouble because you're trying to play defense on one leg to a guy who's throwing offense on two legs. So, I mean, hey, you could catch somebody at the right time. You know, right punch can always do it. But I definitely wouldn't recommend being in that stance while someone's throwing heat at you. And that is the reason why I think that stoppage came about. We're going to go ahead and go to some elbow work now. We're still kicking it in the Rogers Stadium. These are all shows that kind of happen throughout the month. This KO by Superlek is just, it's one of those weird ones, the response to it. Again, take your time, Superlek, S-U-P-E-R-L-E-K, versus Bang Plenoi, B-A-N-G-P-L-E-E-N-O-I. Basically, this KO comes about by, you know, first of all, just the fact that Superlek's like really, really, you know, slick and a very awesome fighter. But what you're going to watch here is this. Superlek is going to step up and he's going to close the range. He's going to close the range and he's going to position his hands. This is very important. Inside before the grapple starts. He's reading that, okay, I've moved into the range of the grapple and I know Bang Plenoi is going to look to engage in the grapple with me. So I want to go there and I'm going to go into that distance and I'm going to look to score inside. Superlek's very slick. Bang Plenoi, especially at that point in the fight, probably thought he'd put, you know, some investment in the bank in the grapple. As soon as Superlek comes in, you really might want to slow this video down. And again, the video is only 2 minutes. So if you want to, you know, rip it and slow it down or just keep pressing pause, you're going to notice that before they start at all, Superlek positions himself where he kills the defense of Bang Plenoi. How does this happen? When they begin the grapple, he positions both of his hands on the inside. Not inside to the point where you get that, you know, he's reaching straight for the neck, but inside to the point where he's able to kill the arms. His left hand is a little bit more extended, but it's more aimed at the shoulder when the grapple comes into play. But it's inside of, if anything wide comes from the right hand of Bang Plenoi, his left hand is in position to get that one. The right hand, excuse me, sorry if I was confusing. The left hand goes inside towards the shoulder. The right hand goes inside, but it almost positions itself right inside of the extended hands, I guess which would be the forearm. So it's like right inside of that area. But you will see, if you press pause in that moment, that Bang Plenoi has nothing defending his face at that period of time. Nothing. What he's going to try to do, Bang Plenoi is going to try to score a hook around this guard because he's thinking, oh, your hands are inside, I'm going to play outside. He's going to try to do a hook around the guard and then go into the knee grapple. What he doesn't realize is Superlek is already poised to drop the elbow. The elbow on the right-hand side is on the inside of the opposing hands, the opponent, Bang Plenoi's extended hand. And because that right hand is on the inside, he can throw whatever elbow he wants. He chooses to do sort of an uppercut elbow. You'll see carnage landed a lot. It's just a sweet, perfectly landed shot. And then Bang Plenoi kind of backs up for a moment, and then the wave of the concussion takes him out, and he falls to the ground. It's one of those late reactions. I've mentioned them before, Masato versus Virgil Calicuto. There's kind of a delayed reaction KO there. And MMA, we had one last year, what was it, with Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald. Just this, the shot hurt him, and then it just the kind of after effect kind of really goes over the opponent, and they go down. It happens in this sport. So really, really slick stuff by Superlek. And really, it just started with he closes the distance with his footwork, but he doesn't commit so much that he gets in close to the grapple. He just gets in position to defend the grapple and keep his hands inside so that he can throw offense. Ben Klinoy is the guy who's on the outside. He's the one who tries to respond outside. He's like, my hands are wide. It does him no good at that point to try to pummel inside. He thinks that he's got the advantage by throwing a hook to the outside and then playing around the neck or playing high in the clinch. And unfortunately, he was not ready whatsoever to defend his head. And the short right elbow comes up, catches him clean, and then he goes down for the KO. So awesome stuff by Superlek. We then move on to, I'm going to keep messing with this. I want to keep mixing up my order. We'll go ahead and stay in the Rogers Stadium. Actually, I believe this is that card earlier that month, maybe a few days before it. We are going to talk to about Komean, K-O-M-E-A-N, and he's going to go against Rung Sang Tawan, R-U-N-G-S-A-N-G-T-A-W-A-N. And this is something that, you know, you see it sometimes, you don't see it all the time, but like, it is a same side kick and punch kind of setup. And the reason why this happens is because of the flow of, it happens a lot of sports, but I just feel like it happens more in Muay Thai because they look to get into their grapple sometimes really really quickly when they feel like some exchanges or when they feel like they can absorb a body kick. So sometimes them reaching for the neck allows this for happen. Sometimes them reaching to pummel, them reaching for the collarbone, them reaching to kill an arm. That opens up the opportunity for people to land a second strike. So you can see same side kick, same side strike. That opens up a lot. It is something that comes into play. So you're going to see them come out, and you're going to see Rung Sang Tawan. They're going to kind of get into an exchange. And in this exchange, all of a sudden, you're going to see what's – I mean, it's really well-timed. You are going to see Komean kind of work in what I would call a like a distance. Like, basically, what you're going to see from him is just kind of playing with his normal offensive setup. And then the next thing you know, he's going to throw his left body kick. It's going to score. But as it's scoring, he's also going to sneak the left hand straight right after. And he's just going to catch a Rung Sang Tawan completely off guard. Not expecting it at all. It's going to be a clean shot that drives him back and takes him out. So he goes down like, I mean, he probably falls maybe 8 feet, or excuse me, 8-9 feet away from Komean when it strikes. It's something, I'm going to bring up another example of it later. It's just something slick to play with. Normally when I see it, you know, the American version of it are the West Coast. It's kind of like a West Coast style. If you pay attention to Muay Thai, you'll see there's a kind of rhythm that they play with on the West Coast out here. The way they can score that kind of strike, it's kind of like a cute strike, like a slick strike. Like, you know, they kind of sneak it in there. But in this version of it, he scores a power kick to the body, and then he sneaks that left hand. The way this is possible is you can't sell out on just the kick for the effect. You want to go kick and then say, all right, my follow-up to the kick on this effect or my follow-up to this strike landing as a kick is I'm going to get my big strike in, but I'm going to leave my hip with enough rotation to fall through and land the next strike. So if you sell out on that body kick all the way, you're relying upon just your shoulders to create enough power on the same side. But if you throw that kick and then you maybe even fall forward a little bit with that side of the hip, you should be able to generate power. Now, again, there are different ways to play with this, and I think the strongest version I've ever seen is off of Errol Zimmerman, who likes to play with the same side knee, same side punch. He likes to bring it up, load up, and then rip around the side. But this is just a really good example of cracking that body, you know, with that powerful left leg and then looking for the follow-up on that same side. If you're right-handed, you could do the same thing, but it's just something I wanted to bring up. There was a couple examples of it that I saw when I was breaking down film, and I was like, you know what, I really want to bring up this one. It was a really good one. So next one I'm going to talk about is this happens in the grapple. So it's an interesting fight because we're going to go to Song Kam, S-O-N-G-K-O-M, versus Songmin Det, S-A-M-I-N-G-D-E-T. And the reason why I bring up this one is because if you go by the pacing of it, I really thought that Songman Det was in control. Like, I thought that he was playing nice and smooth. He did some subtle things. Some come through a low kick. He slid out of the way, came back with a 3-2. He's playing super easy. Like, he's throwing clean shots, high kick setups. Like, everything's coming for him in slow motion. He's not rushing anything. He's in his flow. He's in his offensive flow, if you will. So I'm watching Songman work, and I'm like, all right, this guy's got it going on. He's got to figure it out. I'm watching Songman Det work. And I'm like, what is Songman going to do to get into this? And sadly, the person that, Songman Det's going to do to get it, or Songman going to do to get into this, sadly, Songman Det's the one who lets him in. Basically, what happens is probably one of the stronger forms of the grapple you can have is if you can get your whole arm, whatever arm, left arm or right arm, to kind of go across the back of the neck and high shoulders, and then for you to have the clinch either under the arm or over the arm or on top of the shoulder on the other side. And if you can get your head in position, you can have people trapped there. So as opposed to what you guys would hear if those of you guys who watch MMA, sometimes you'll hear Jordan use the term the tie plump. And basically they mean both arms extended, and they mean underneath, kind of like a distance type of clinch kind of game. It's not super distance, but it's not the pummeling version that you're going to see at the highest level of Thailand. It's this, both of my arms behind the neck and they're trapped. It's really a kind of game that it's like, all right, this shouldn't work on elite people, but it can work in MMA because there's so many different skill sets that they have to learn that sometimes they don't focus on the pummeling aspect of being in the clinch as much. So in Thailand, you're almost never going to see that type of clinch. You're going to see a clinch where arm is usually killed and the other person can control with head movement, and they can get into body locks, and like, it's just a different type of clinch. There's so much more pummeling. They've been doing this game since they were like, you know, between 8 and, you know, some of them have been younger, but between 8 and 13, they've been playing it for a really long time. In this version, I'm watching it, and I feel like the fight is like all Songman Det. I think he's doing everything right. And then all of a sudden he gets into that clinch spot and he doesn't do anything with it. He just holds it. He literally holds it. And I watched it and I go, okay, as I watch this fight, I'm wondering if he's going to be the one that gets the KO, gets KO'd, because it's just, he's dominant. I could see that. I'm looking at it. I'm like, this is a 5-minute fight, so I know there's a KO in it. And I'm looking at his early dominance. I'm like, oh, he's just playing so slow motion and so slick. Clearly Songman Det is going to run Songman into something. He gets into that clinch, and the next thing you know, Songman doesn't really do it that much in the first one, but Songman was able to land like a little knee, and I noticed that Songman Det didn't give me any offense in that spot. So I'm like, hey, if there's a chance for Songman, it's going to be in that spot. This is an example of how you can still stop a guy with knees if you're in the lower grapple. When this happened, I truly believe that at that time, my memory serves me correctly, Songman Det had gotten into the power grappling position. He got into it, and he kept playing head position, and he got into it. But the problem was he didn't offer any offense. So Songman said, hey, I might be lower, but I'm still trying to score, and I'm down. Urgency helps. And he just started throwing some knees. He threw like 3 or 4, and one of them, I could just see it right away. It caught Songman Det good. And I was like, Songman Det, you are the one who invited this grapple. You know what I'm saying? Like, you invited it, and you didn't look to be the stronger guy in it. Like, you didn't look to be the stronger offensive guy in it. It's almost like you used it as a break to keep the fight flow the speed that you wanted it at. But Songman Det showed that he wasn't going to knee in that spot, or at least knee competitively. He threw like 1 or 2, but if the other guy throws 7, he ain't doing nothing. So they get back into that spot. Next thing you know, Songman from the lower grapple, and I think he's pummeling, he's able to score some knees, and then all of a sudden you watch Songman Det go down. And a guy who was up on the cards probably at that time, he gets stopped. Songman gets a nice victory here. Again, it's just, I believe I spelled this one out, S-O-N-G-K-O-M, and then Songman Det, S-A-M-I-N-G-D-T. The reason why this fight happened, or the reason why that grapple happened, is you can have, and some people do it, I see it in other sports, I've seen Anderson Silva do it in MMA, I've seen people do it in international Muay Thai, I've seen people do it in the stadiums. If you get the offensive position and grappling, like if you get you would call the dominant position where you feel like you're playing the high road, if you will, you got to throw offense. Stop being cute and looking for that big perfect shot. Let it go, because in every sport, the way they respond will be different. In this example of it, Songman was just aggressive with the knees. And even though he was under, even though he was the low guy, he's able to get a stoppage. In the MMA, if you hold on to that clinch, guys will just start throwing punches, just throwing, because they're like, hey, if there's no knee that's come to kill me yet, I got to punch my way out of here because most of them don't know how to pummel their way out of there. But they could still score a brutal KO if both of your hands, which is your defense, is sitting on their neck and they could punch themselves into a position where they can come around the outside. That's just the nature of the game, you know. So they should very much, or they really should, try to be conscious of that sort of thing. So you look at that. You look at those wide shots coming through. You look at knees coming underneath. Everybody, if you get into those clinch spots, you've got to be the one to take the fight. You've got to be the one to be aggressive there. And this one hurt Song Mendette, who lost the fight that he was winning because he wasn't offensive when he needed to be offensive. Next fight, I am going to talk about, I've got some good options here. I really enjoyed, you know, just a little sidebar here, as I really enjoyed putting this together. Like, as I was going through these fights, I was like, man, how do I go back to it? I haven't had Thai Stadium stuff on for a while. Do I just do the last 5-10 fights that was uploaded? No, I want to do something that would get people into it. Maybe they have been watching. Maybe they have been paying attention to the fights as much as I have. I want them to, and I haven't been paying attention to the fights as much as I usually do. I want them to come in and be like, all right, why is this a sport you love so much, and how would you sell someone at it who hadn't seen it before? And that's why I'm breaking these down the way that I am. So I'm excited that you guys are listening, and there's a lot of good stuff here. Let's go back to some low kick stoppages, because those are always fun. Prakia Petlek, Prakaipetlek, versus Petungyung, Pettung Yung, and this stoppage here by, this one's more on the brutal side. I'll go ahead and warn you in advance. This is basically just something that you've seen done before. A lot of you who take Muay Thai or kickboxing classes have done this, but this is just a really high-level, violent way of seeing it. Prakai Petlek does a really good job of reading Pettung Yung's low kick, and he are like teep, and he's gonna step, and he's gonna fire a low kick right underneath it. But the location of the low kick is kind of more around the knee, not so much the leg. And if you can catch it really bad there, you can really hurt somebody. Now, it's scary because you never want anybody to have an ACL injury or anything like that. So be careful if you're playing with this and a teammate. But this is a good example of this is a combat sport. Let's not have any reservations about what we do for those of you who compete in this. It is a violent sport, and it does have very violent outcomes sometimes, but it is also a beautiful sport, and technique, when it's displayed at the highest, like literally when I watch its videos, I'm like alone, I'm like oohing and awing, and it just, I enjoy the sport so much. But to break this down, basically you're going to get in round two, Pettung Yung is going to throw a teep. And just going to be a subtle sidestep, but, you know, back. But the timing on the low kick follow is going to score, you know, Petlek's low kick follow is going to score the moment Pettung Yung's leg hits the ground. It's going to score right high, right around the knee, just a little higher above the knee. And the moment it scores, you're going to see this kind of really weird turn. Like, the body will turn, and it looks kind of nasty, you know. Let's just be real. Didn't look like it was the most beautiful thing in the world to experience. But you see that knee bend down, and you're like, all right, that was some brutal stuff, you know. So I watched Prakai Petlek score that one, and I go, all right, he's going to come back to that low kick. He did come back to it for a while, like play with it in singles, but didn't really build on it until Pettung Yung gave him the opportunity, almost a mirror image of it. This time he teeps with the right leg. I think the first one was with the left leg, and he attacked that leg when it hit the ground. This time he's going to teep with the right leg, Pettung Yung is, and then the moment he steps to the side, he's going to attack the other leg, and he's going to catch it right as Pettung Yung gets both legs on the ground, but he's going to catch Prakai Petlek is going to catch it right at the knee again, and then it's just a horrible bend, and then all of a sudden you just watch Pettung Yung go down. When you're playing this with teammates, be careful. Like, you don't want to take out your teammate, so don't aim around the knee with a teammate. But when you're playing it in the sport of combat sport or whatever, the game is to win, and sometimes there are some shots that are offensively legal that are still brutal, devastating stings, and this is one of those. So make sure, look out for your teammates. But when you're competing, the other person understands that. I've been on every side of it. I've had a lot of my guys win by KO. I've lost by KO. I've had dominating wins. I've had, you know, losses where my guys have been dominated. I've experienced everything in the sport. Fortunately for me, I've, you know, probably won 86% of the time that I've gone out there, just because I've been blessed with good athletes and they put in the work to be good. But like, I understand, whether I'm on the winning side or the losing side, that this is a violent sport and there are things that happen in it. So what happened to Patung Young, it's hopefully he'll be able to recover. Hopefully it wasn't as bad as it looked. I mean, they brought the stretcher out, so it wasn't good. But hopefully he'll be able to recover and come back. But we realize the risk that we're taking. You know, whether you're playing American football, whether you're playing rugby, we realize the risk of the sport. But we love the sport. So please enjoy it, but understand that this is very much a part of it. I'm going to go ahead and go down to my two favorite ones. As I was looking at this, I was like, man, which ones am I going to wait for to the end? So I'll go ahead and go to my last three favorites. And I am excited to break these down for you guys, because I truly do believe that when you sit down and you watch this video, these videos with me of these last three, they are awesome. They are awesome, awesome KOs, and they're the kind of, you know, shots where you're like, all right, I'm going to replay that one. We're going to go ahead and go with Rung Narai, R-U-N-G-N-A-R-A-I. Make sure you take your time to find it, and you're going to go to him versus Satan Manglek, S-A-T-A-N-M-U-A-N-G-L-E-K, Satan Manglek. And he's going to go against Rung Narai. And this, I'm telling you, this is just awesome. So basically what you're going to see is Rung Narai is being back to the ropes. And he's going to do a powerful knee, just clear step knee, bang. Fires it from position. I don't even think that he steps. I think he just fires it from his spot, if I remember correctly. After he scores the knee, he's going to read his opponent. He's going to see that Satan Manglek backs up for a little bit. Satan Manglek then steps forward. He just got kneed. This is Muay Thai. You can't get kneed out of the way, especially not even a clinch knee. You can't just take a straight knee and get backed up. So he's going to close the gap. He's going to look to return to the space. He is going to be met with an awesome, awesome head kick by Rung Narai. And I think the reason why it worked out so well, it's just the simple matter of you score a strike on somebody. It's a great way for those of you who score 1-2s or teeps or whatever. You've got to read the distance that they leave you and decide who's going to fill that space. So you score that strike, all of a sudden you got that space in front of you. When people come in and close that space, you got to have offense waiting for them. You got to have them something for them to run into. It is a great opportunity for you to score because you're sitting there ready and they're looking to close the gap. So as soon as he scores this knee, he sees that he steps, he goes back. He's going to fire the same side high kick. Scores the knee, gets the foot on the ground. Satan Manglek comes in to close that distance, and bang, gone. KO. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. When you watch this video, you're going to be like, oh, like oohs and ahs. Like, it's such a wonderful KO. It's why the sport's beautiful. Just beautiful technique like that. Step knee, step back. You wait in the offense to come through. Bang, head kick. Clear that space with a head kick. Even if he missed it, at least he threw a strike while his opponent was walking towards him. The opponent misread the defense. Like, he just kind of like tried to shove, like kind of put like a half effort of getting his arm up. That ain't going to do it for a head kick, son. That was the end of his night. Good stuff there by Rung Narai. Definitely, definitely check this. I'm telling you, as I revisit and I'm looking at my notes here, I'm just sitting here thinking, I can't wait for all these guys to experience going through these fights. They are a lot of fun. So we're going to go ahead and take you to the almost first place, but it ended up being third place as I was putting this together. I mean, there's these KOs, as you guys go through them, you're going to see, man, there were, you know, great options all over the place. But the ones that I picked as my winners for first and second, they're the ones that, first, second, and third, they're the ones that I feel that you guys are going to be like, all right, Muay Thai is awesome, Steven. You are right. Okay. Nodding, that, no pun intended, because my last name's right. So we're going to go to hit up New Limpini, which actually had a really freaky thing as I was watching this. I wasn't expecting it at all. Apparently, because I've mentioned this before in the show, they have, where New Limpini is, it's outside of the city. And because of traffic, it can be difficult to get to. So, as you notice, the Raja Stadium's been putting on a lot of epic shows lately. Whereas Limpini had all those shows when I went out to Thailand and when I've been doing this podcast through the years. Limpini had those shows. Now it's a little bit different. Now the shows go on the side of Raja more than Lumpini, because Lumpini's, you know, it's got a new facility and everything, but it's further away. But in the footage of this, like, between rounds, they show, like, they've got these, like, dancing girls, and I was like, that's just hilarious. That, you know, maybe they're doing, they were brought in to try to lure people into the effect and make it worth the drive for them, but I just laughed at them, like, come on, man, what are you guys doing? People came here to see the fights, and that's what I'm going to break down for you. So, we're going to go to San, S-A-E-N, versus Pet Utong, P-E-T-U-T-O-N-G. And you are going to get ready to see some awesomeness and some awesomeness. So basically what happens is it all gets started when Pet Utong, he is going to hurt San in an exchange. So what's going to happen is they're going to be by the ropes. There's going to be a kick involved, and then he's going to throw hands. And San's trying to take advantage of Pet Utong after he had thrown the kick. He's trying to find hands offense in between. But Pet Utong throws his hands and he gets him hurt. San's in bad shape. This is how you finish a guy, okay? Pet Utong comes in. He's looking for offense. And then all of a sudden he looks for big time elbows. He's like, throws, gets to the outside. He does like a post, puts his right hand on, fires the elbow inside, post, fires the elbow inside, then does a big jumping video game-esque type elbow and tries to slash over the top to create a big elbow stoppage. Then, as it's happening, San does what a lot of other Thais do, and a theme that you guys have heard me say in the show a lot, when people are close, they automatically think to go into the clinch. Boxers need to work at this. I've got MMA guys that need to work at this. When you're hurt, find the other guy. Try to go chest to chest. Not a bad idea. If you get stopped, you get stopped. But it's you trying to find room for yourself. You're trying to buy time for yourself. And no one found time for themselves like Pet Utong, because once he saw that he was reaching for him, he did step back elbow, and then he stepped back and he came right underneath with an uppercut. Like, and again, as he's throwing these elbows in the clinch, yeah, like he threw a barrage at them. Like some of them are like clinch elbows, like our dirty boxing elbows where he's holding the back of the head and he's firing elbows through. Then I mentioned the post elbow where he posts with the right hand and fires the left elbow through. But as San comes towards, arms extended, kind of reaching to try to find him in a clinch, it's just a subtle uppercut that comes in and it finishes him. Everybody that's listening, fight fans, and for those of you that participate in combat sports, even if you're just sparring, one of the best KOs to find in this game is if you can find an uppercut when someone's hurt with earmuffs on, because those are the shots that they're most likely going to not block. If you throw something wide, there's a chance that you could buy time with them. This is a kickboxing podcast. I'll just use an MMA example from my own life. We had a fight when I was first kind of making my name with Johnny. We're coming up. We go against Koscheck. And Koscheck got an eye poke on Johnny like maybe 40 seconds into the fight. The thing that saved us when he got us that eye poke was he kind of walked after Johnny and he kept throwing an overhand right at Johnny while Johnny defended up on the side of the cage trying to get his vision back. If he had thrown multiple shots and then tried to hide uppercut in there, then it would have been much more difficult for Johnny to find his offense. But because he just kept clubbing at the same eye from the same side, it was easy for Johnny to see that one. Eventually he got his eye back. We were able to get a split decision and we got the win. And then, you know, the ball kept rolling for me. But like in this way, Pet Utong really does a good job of reading that. This guy, not only is the earmuffs the only thing that saved him when I was throwing elbows before, now he's looking to go into clinch to buy himself some time. So if I keep playing stepping backwards, just step backwards, the opportunity for the kill shot's going to come. And the opportunity for the kill shot came, uppercut came through, landed on San, clean KO victory, awesome stuff. The other thing that makes this fight awesome was in round two, they had already gotten the elbows flying. So the crowd's into it, and it's not that there's like, awesome action in it, like just killer back and forth exchanges, but the rhythm and the timing of the shots and the violence and the aggression and throwing the elbows, it really made it something beautiful to watch. So now, in my excitement, I am pleased to say we are at the number one video for you guys to watch of these. And again, they're all great Muay Thais, as I said before. Hopefully you've been going around with me as you did this, but this right here was the most enjoyable one for me to watch, and it happened at New Lumpini, and it happened on the 16th of last month as we get Petake, P-E-T-A-K-E, as he loses by awesome KO to Tuarit, T-E-W-A-R-I-T. R-I-T, Tarit. First of all, it happens. The first thing you're going to notice is this. Tarit is so much smaller than Tech. He's shorter. They're the same weight class, but he's shorter. So he gets out there and immediately, you know, they're playing a distance game. He's trying to close the distance and so on. So what happens is as they get into a exchange, he plays same side, same kick, as I mentioned before. And all of a sudden he gets Pateke hurt. And when he gets him hurt, this is the cool thing about it. This is also how you stop a guy. Now, again, it needs to be said that this is actually a really good stoppage for guys of you who listen to this podcast and you're MMA fans, because there is no flash knockdowns in stadium Muay Thai. So if there's a flash knockdown in kickboxing, Glory, K1, Infusion, it's a down. In their sports, you hop back up, it's just a significant score, and you've got to figure your way out into the, you know, figure your way back into the fight. But they're not stopping it. They do 8 counts and 10 counts for hurt people. But if you just got knocked down, you get back up, you got to, you know, fight your way back. So as soon as Pateke gets back, you know, or as soon as he goes down, you know, he's in bad shape, but he kind of gets up pretty quick. And then the next thing you know, Tawarik comes in and he's mixing it together. There are elbows in there. There's combinations in there. And then he does a kick leg and he's going to sweep him. Now, when I first saw the sweep, I was like, man, do I really want to be sweeping a guy that I could KO? But he gets right back up from the sweep. And then he goes right back to work, landing big-time shots to the outside, big-time shots. And I think he causes maybe 2 downs as he keeps doing this. And it's just the diversity of the offense is the thing that matters first. You get him hurt, but you keep mixing it up. There's body shots in there. There's big shots to the head. There's elbows in there. You want to mix it up. That way they can't get a read on where you're trying to play with when you try to finish them. They're already disorientated from the shot. So now the only thing that can save them is you. You know, you are the only one that could save them by throwing some offense that they are prepared for or allowing them to get into the clinch spots. So Tarit was able to score some big-time offense, and then he realizes, I'm not going to get the stoppage right now. Still looking for big heat, but he's not going to get it. Pateke in those moments decides it's time to fight back. All of a sudden, he lets go some offense. He gets Tarit into the corner. He starts throwing some shots while he's there. He's trying to fight his way back, and the crowd's getting behind him. Tarit is going to shut it down with a, first of all, like I said before, he's a smaller guy, and he's going to fire a big-time body kick. And you're going to see it score Pateke. Pateke is, you know, because he's, Tarit's in the corner. Like, he's in I don't think it's his corner specifically, but he's in that corner. And then he fires the body kick, and then he fires a teep, if I remember correctly, and then he fires a straight left hand, all of this at the body. And as soon as he scores them, I knew right away, I was like, that was a mean series of offense. Those 3 shots were mean. The moment they landed, Pateke looks to close the distance over Tarit. As soon as he does it, Tarit is going to trap. He's going to use, you know, I talked about being inside position. Now he's going to play defense, and he's going to play the outside position first. He's going to trap both hands inside. He's going to have his right hand on the outside, and he's going to have his left hand on the outside of both arms of Pateke, or Pateke, however it's pronounced. I'll go ahead and say Pateke for the rest of the show. So Pateke is doing a step knee in his direction because, like I said, he's hurt by the body shot, so he's looking to get back into the clinch. You're going to watch Tarit position himself to the outside while he uses his left hand to pull down the right guard, the right arm of Pateke. The reason why this works against Pateke is because Pateke is, as I mentioned before, he's on one leg. It's so much easier to manipulate people's arms when they're on one leg as opposed to when they're on two and they've got their arms underneath them. He's going to get into that position. He's going to pull that arm down. And he's also going to angle himself out so that he fires this left elbow to the side of the head. There's nothing there to defend. Bang. Game time. Tarit goes down. Big time elbow scores. It's one of the sweeter KOs you're going to get. The rhythm of this fight, the crowd involvement, the intensity of the strikes, the fact that I'm telling you, Tarit is a smaller dude. He's a smaller dude. But it's still an awesome thing to play with. It's still going to be a fun thing to see a little guy score significant strikes against big people. So if you are a little guy, start playing with landing these kind of strikes. Who cares? You're smaller. You know, this guy's short, so not necessarily smaller, so it's not necessarily fair because they are the same weight class. But I'm telling you, the size difference looks significant. But the offensive strike difference when they were scored was all to the tie, Tarit. T-E-W-R-I-R-I-T, awesome stuff. So I really hope you guys enjoyed this breakdown of Elite Stadium Muay Thai. I wanted to focus on it. That's 50 minutes. I bet 50 minutes of that. And now I'm going to go ahead and try to finish, revisit some of the glory results and some of the results over the past weekend. But no, I owed it to Full Stadium Muay Thai to sit down and give you guys why I love it. And sometimes seeing stoppages, which is the most important part of combat sports, is in terms of people love exchanges, people love awesome wars. But if you stop somebody, that sends a message, and everybody likes a stoppage. So let's go ahead and go through the the glory card. K1 is next month. We're going to go ahead and go through the glory card. Go ahead and start off with Manchik gets victory over Thompson to open the Super Fight series. This fight, I mean, congrats to Mancha, but it's just Thompson had some moments where he scored kickboxing here and there, but technique-wise, both guys got to get better, spend some more time, work their game, work their craft, and they will. But Thompson has. He's been giving quite a few glory opportunities. He got on the legacy kickboxing thing or whatever. He struggled to find a W, but he's still, you know, working. And I was fine with this fight being on the card. Eric Haycraft put this one together because he usually does the American portions of the cards. I was fine that this fight happened. It didn't drive me too crazy. Didn't reflect the best kickboxing in the world, but both guys got the opportunity. Mike LeMaire looked pretty good. Looked pretty good against Roberson. I picked Mike LeMaire in this one because my thing with Roberson is he just needs kickboxing fights. And clearly, you know, it's not fair to him that he, you know, lost the decision to Jerome LeBanner after clearly winning by KO. And great job in the commentary with Mauro Ranallo mentioning that it was like a 24-second count, because it was a 24-second count. It was the longest count in the history of counts. And it should have been his KO victory, but he did lose the decision, and, you know, maybe Jerome rides off in the sunset on that. That's probably one of the worst. It's in the top 10 worst decisions I've ever seen in a kickboxing match. So everybody kind of has this kind of soft spot for him. But he has yet to put that technique together and turn it into quality kickboxing performances to get his hands raised. LeMaire was able to score. I think it was a right hand that scored the down in the first round. And then he was able to outpoint Roberson after that. Roberson's got the technique. It's just going to take some time. It really is. It's going to take some time for him to get, I guess, what would be a... He should probably consider doing what Simon Marcus did, where Simon Marcus said, I'm going to go to Thailand. And the goal of going to Thailand was simply so that he could build on his kickboxing resume. Like, he's like, even if the fight gets me, you know, 80 baht, I need to go to Cambodia or wherever, and I need to get some fights because I'm not going to catch these guys in the world. There was a night where I was watching it. I thought he was in a tournament. He wasn't in a tournament, you know, when I did the podcast with him. He's just a guy who fought twice on a card in China. He had two guys scheduled to fight that night, and he was able to stop them both by KO. I'm thinking it's a tournament. He said, no, I just scheduled myself to go against two people because how else am I going to get fights? That's awesome. That's what Roberson's going to have to do to close the distance. Waiting on glory opportunities won't do it. Glory's not going to come, but, I mean, they're coming to the States again, and I want to say July. So, like, that's not enough. That's not enough to move your resume to get you the opportunities that you need. It's just, it won't do it. So we'll see moving forward, but that's a good one for LeMaire to get himself on track. He got the W here. He struggled against the better guys in their division, so he needs to get these kind of wins before he tries another step about. Tivity Von Seuss looks good over Hassas, and I thought that Tivity Von Seuss, first perfect job, perfect big-time score on the switch stance right hook. It just showed how tough Hassas was, because she bounced up as if nothing had happened to her, just ready to fight right afterwards. It was such a big-time shot. It was almost like SportsCenter KO of the night kind of deal, but it wasn't. It was just a clean shot that put her down, and she got right back up. And she was competent mentally in her kickboxing, but after that, it kind of wrecked her flow, and she wasn't able to get into her combination low-kick flow as she had before. She had moments here and there. Tiffany Von Seuss, better athlete, more power, was able to move. She got her low-kick game going in the second and third. She moves on easily. I'll go ahead and mention it now. There seemed to have been a misunderstanding with Iman Barlow and the tournament structure that they have with Glory and the agreed weight. Now, I mentioned before that was 122 pounds. It's kind of right on the edge of the best women's fighters in the world. They usually compete around 115, between 115 and 120. So it's a little bit outside of that. And Mon said that she was down to do it, but she thought that she was just kind of fighting in a one-off opportunity. And she said then it was a tournament. She's the Infusion champion, so she's got responsibilities there. And whatever show they do, they come to England quite often. It just didn't match up contract-wise with what she had already. And I think that go to liverkick.com. They did a good job in the story. They mentioned that this sort of thing had happened before, where the athletes seemed like, okay, they were interested in being part of Glory, and in the example that he brought up was Kevin Ross. Kevin Ross was down to be a part of the kickboxing product, but just the obligations he had with Lime Fight and what was asked as far as him leaving and what he had to do there didn't work out, and he wasn't able to fight for them. Imam Barlow then said afterwards that, hey, if they wanted to do like a single fight or a one-off, as they call it in England, she said, everybody wants me to fight Tiffany, and I'm down to fight Tiffany because that's what this is about. And I'm like, yes, that is what this is about. Because as soon as I saw the tournament field, the first thing that went through my head was, this is going to clearly be a Tiffany Von Seuss versus Iman Barlow sort of thing. So Iman, I'm hoping that like she should be available maybe at the end of the year. They are going to England towards the end of the year, so maybe if this tournament finishes up, maybe they can do that. But Tiffany did work here. It's just about building her brand now. It was great to see her and Simon Marcus and Dustin Jacoby were all on ESPN Sports Center this past week. That's just great for the kickboxing sport. The only thing that hurt us was that where they didn't go live. If they had went live that Friday night, that would have been perfect because all the MMA events were the next night. You know, they didn't even have Glory to compete with. But instead, they tried to do it on the replay delay. And outside of what I'm going to mention earlier with Gregorian, the ratings were hurt when you kind of have that delay. And we keep forgetting that the ratings will also be hurt by the fact that people are watching this on ESPN3. People are watching it live. So that's going to affect the bottom line of the ratings. But Tiffany Von Seuss, clearly one of the bigger draws here. She was really excited about it. She was happy about kickboxing. ESPN, like everything is, once upon a time, I had her on my podcast show. Now she's on ESPN, you know? So not that my podcast isn't ESPN level, but it was really good that she is having that success. I'm very happy for her. Big time win here. And again, I don't know who's going to stop her in this tournament now that Iman is gone. Next fight goes to Guto Inocente as he gets a victory over the replacement, Brian Doze. I was not impressed by this one. I think Inocente just was the better athlete, and he just kept playing with trick shots, if you will. Because he was the better athlete, he's able to win. He did a lot of spinning hook kicks, spinning jump kicks, jumping knees. It just wasn't a complete kickboxing performance, which is unfortunate because he showed good kickboxing performances in some of his fights in Brazil. So that was the guy that I was hoping came out and fought with Doze. Doze had moments here and there, but man, Inocente, fighting at heavyweight, he's definitely all the level of athlete, but I'd like to see more clean kickboxing in the next fight. I thought this one was just a little bit too much of a showcase of, I'm going to keep doing this jumping, spinning stuff all fight. I want to see him go back to regular kickboxing combination flow and scoring effective offense for three rounds. Wellness, and the Wellness brothers are just so interesting stories, but anyways, Jason Wellness gets a victory over Joe Schilling, very close fight. Wellness, good work with the low kicks. I had Joe Schilling winning. I gave him 2-1, but again, one of those rounds, I thought Schilling was able to score with the hands very significantly, and I thought that, as I said before the fight, how long he plays in Southpaw will be big, and how much he does with his offense, because he's kind of adopted he plays with almost Artem Levin style. Not saying he's Artem Levin, but the way he was kind of picking those shots, just pop, 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 pop. He didn't really sit on power as much. He just played with volume. And in there, Wellness was just sitting on power, sitting on his low kick game. And whenever Schilling stayed orthodox long enough, he was able to score some pretty significant shots. But whenever he played with the switch stance, I thought that those were the advantages. You know, the softball stance was the advantages for Joe Schilling. So, again, I thought that the boxing was enough, but there was good, strong low kick work. And I think that Wellness did it with the power. So, two controversial decisions. Really cool to see that Joe Schilling online posted a video of him straightening out his own toe. Because he said, hey, I fought with a broken toe. Why did you have to stop? He fixes his own toe on his Facebook video. Joe Schilling's awesome. It's unfortunate that there's some story saying that there's a chance that he might not fight for Glory anymore. We'll see. I mean, he fights Bellator kickboxing. They'll keep him active. MMA. He's made money as a kickboxer. I can't think of anybody in the States that's made the money in kickboxing that he's made. So shout out to him. I definitely hope all the best for him. Willness, of course, he should be set up to fight Simon Marcus, who beat Dustin Jacoby. It's just a great story. I'm telling you, Willness came out. He has this firepower, and he just didn't put the consistency together. He lost to Simon Marcus last year. He lost to Schilling, as I mentioned. He just didn't. He looks like he throws the hardest shots in the world, but they score clean. They don't necessarily kill guys, and he just didn't look like it was going to happen. Jafar Willness came out, didn't have the KO pop, and he's, you know, losing the decisions. It didn't look like it was going to happen. Next thing you know, Jafar Willness wins a tournament in China last year, turns himself around, puts himself in position to be one of the better fighters in the world. Definitely seeing him as a liver kick's got him at number three. Works for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, he has put together a great resume. I would not have seen it coming. In that way, Jason Willness has turned it all around. Like, he has turned it around. He's now going to be competing for the title. I didn't see this coming. Now, again, there are some strong candidates out there of up-and-coming young stars. Infusion's got a few that could compete with him. I would definitely like to see, maybe even a what happens when Artem Levin returns and that kind of stuff, whatever. But I like the idea of him fighting for the title next, and what a great turnaround story. We go to the tournament field as we get Francis Angbang and Casey Green, and then we get Daniel Morales against Richard Abraham. Richard Abraham, of course, he throws that heat. And Morales, he was able to score in spots. He just can't score enough against Abraham. Abraham's scores show up so much more. I'm wondering if Daniel Morales has got the opportunity to maybe make 155 pounds. I don't know if that would kill him, but his KO pop isn't there at this weight class, and it's gonna hurt him for the rest of his career. So hopefully he's able to turn that around, but he's scoring fine. He's scoring against all these guys. He was able to score against Casey Green. He just didn't have the ability to hurt them, and that meant that Richard could walk through shots. He could land big offense, so he was able to get that victory in the first round of the tournament. Francis Angbang came out with some really good kickboxing. If you look at combination of kickboxing flow, as Francis Angbang gets a victory over Casey Green, Angbang actually has the skill set pretty good. He just loses to people who just have that added dimension. Just a little bit more slickness, just a little bit more to him. Francis Angbang is a very good fighter, but there's just that little extra that he struggles with. And if you don't offer that, he usually does a good job of getting his low kick game going. He clearly was landing the biggest low kicks in this tournament, in combination flow and so on. But just that gaps in activity, the way that Abraham was able to score some big shots, very close. So after Angbang beats Green, he meets Richard Abraham in the final. They go to a split decision. I've got no problem with how the split decision went down. I thought that it was close. Good stuff for Abraham. Abraham went out there, and he's got a great story. He had a child die at a very young age, and he's really came out, thank God, thanks team, excited, and he said, hey, I want to fight Nicky Holtzkin. Me personally, I'm not trying to have him fight Nicky Holtzkin next. I want him to go ahead and let's fight some of the other better 170s. Even fight Kongulo, you know what I'm saying? Like, fight some of those guys. His win over Jajcik was a big win. Like, it was a big win, the male Jajcik, not the female fighter, of course. But, like, that was a big win. So maybe he gets another guy that moves him in that direction. So next thing you know, we're talking, he gets a Kareem Gaji. Works for me. I don't know what Kareem Gaji's situation is. I don't know if Bellator's got him tied up for forever for being their title holder. But Kareem Gaji's that type of level. Mirtha Grunhart works for me as a name. Those are the level of guys that he should be competing against right now. But we'll see what happens to him moving forward. If Joseph Vantolini comes back, that'd be a good first fight for Joseph Vantolini, as opposed to just putting him right in the title picture. Maybe those two fight. That'd be fun. The super fight had a fight that I just knew would be a one-sided victory for Mark Gorian as he goes against Jimmy Kalabali. But here's the thing that made this one special. Gregorian gets an awesome head kick KO. Okay? They get into exchange. He's already winning the kickboxing. He throws a hook. Steps off, throws the right high kick. At the same time, the GMA thought that he had backed him into a trap, like going back to the ropes, and he tried to throw a right hand. He tried to run him into a right hand. So he's throwing a right hand, so he literally like falls on his sword and he eats the high kick. The kick scored for Gregorian, and he gets the big KO victory there. Because they don't show the video until on delay, they play the video on Sunday night. I'm watching SportsCenter. For those of you who are wondering, I've got a lot of international fan base here. SportsCenter is the flagship of ESPN. ESPN is the big sports channel here in the States. It is a huge channel. It is, to give you an example, they play some of our college sporting events and some the National Football League, the American Football League. They play their events and all the ratings records that they have were all done on ESPN. They're all done on that outlet. So the most eyes in our country for sports is on ESPN. And I'm watching it, and ESPN's got this segment called My Star of the Night. They've got two broadcasters. One broadcaster will be like, this is my star. The other one will be like, this is my star. And then the nation will have a vote-in star that they have every night. So then I'm listening to it, and the guy goes, Murat Grigoryan. As soon as he says that name, I said, oh my goodness, they're about to have kickboxing on ESPN SportsCenter, the flagship show, the main show for them. Sure enough, it's Grigoryan's head kick, and he's talking about it. And it's just funny because there was like something with baseball players, and a guy got punched here in our state, in the States. But like when that landed, and that got on SportsCenter, I have seen kickboxing on ESPN before. I've seen it. They've had events before. They've had K1 events before. I've seen it before. In fact, I believe that ESPN's like pay-per-view channel was when K1 first had. I think that was the connection. Late nights, they had kickboxing, so I had the opportunity to watch ESPN before and watch kickboxing on ESPN. I've never seen kickboxing on SportsCenter, not to the best of my memory. So to see that head kick get on there was like the biggest news of the weekend for me. So shout out to Murat Grigoryan. Clearly, Hassas is his girlfriend. I didn't know that until they announced it on the broadcast feed. So, but shout out to him. Big KO win. Hopefully he enjoyed his experience here. And you made it on SportsCenter, son. That's crazy. Last fight, of course, Simon Marcus gets a victory to retain the title as he beats Dustin Jacoby. The thing with Dustin Jacoby is I just thought that he went for the KO for 5 rounds. And in the corner, they were saying, hey, man, he's going to tire. You're going to find your shot. And I thought that his best performance as a kickboxer for me came in a loss when he went against Alex Pereira. And when he went against Alex Pereira, Pereira came out there throwing combinations and so on. But I thought that he was committed to throwing combinations and low kicks. He was committed to kickboxing that night. Because of the level of talent that he went against in the tournaments that he won, he was able to get stoppages just off of his aggression and his power, but he wasn't able to put clean kickboxing together. So everybody was happy for him, but you could see that there's going to be a wall here. So when he got put in the title shot, I was like, oh, that's a little weird. You know, I thought maybe they'd go in the direction of maybe he gets Joe Schilling. You know, like that to me is the fight that makes the most sense, you know, at the time. But and they could still do it maybe if they can figure things out with Joe Schilling. But when this came together, I thought that was his game plan. Almost there were very little kicks. He didn't throw many kicks at all. He just kind of kept looking for opportunities to score. Simon Marcus kept playing with that mean body kick. He was scoring boxing here and there. Simon, once he realized that the only KO shots were coming at him, he had long periods of time where he just fought with his hands down. Wasn't the cleanest performance. I thought that Marcus won every round. You can make an argument that maybe Jacoby won one. One of the judges had Jacoby winning 2 rounds, and if it wasn't for Marcus winning the last round, Jacoby would have won. But I just think that Jacoby, it was a lot. It was moving fast, and I think that KOs can blind people from kickboxing acumen developing. He needs more fights where he's pushed, but he doesn't get the KO stoppages. That way we can see his kickboxing skill come out. So, like I said before, the two fights that impressed me the most with him, as I mentioned before, I was really impressed, even though he lost, with his commitment to trying to kickbox. And that was a camp that he did completely with the Hammers Gym. He tried to come out and kickbox, combination low kick game with Alex Pereira. And then the other fight was the Colette fight in New York in the first round of the tournament. I thought in those fights he was kickboxing. But I thought this night he was trying to score KOs. Marcus, too slick, too skilled. This was the outcome that I expected. He's the better fighter. So we'll see what happens with him moving forward. It really was a I'm happy for him. I'm glad he got that win. I'm glad he got on SportsCenter. I'm glad the sport is making moves in that way. Now we just got to get live, okay? Go ahead and throw a couple more results out there. Anatoly Moiseev keeps himself busy. He gets a victory over Sergio Canters by KO. One thing that even though he gets his victory here, I absolutely love that Infusion guys are fighting in Japan and China because it's getting them fight opportunities, but it's also letting them test their skill a little bit, see how good the rest of the world is out there because they've had some good outcomes and some bad outcomes, and this is an example of that. Cedric Manhoff gets a victory over Christopher Mena, another guy who Mena's been used in the Infusion brand before. Cantor's, as I mentioned before, used that. The Anatoly Moiseev right hand that dropped Sergio Cantor's was just a kill shot. It is just a straight up the 1-2 that just blitzes him. Absolutely beautiful stuff. Yacine Beitar of Belgium, he also has fought in the Infusion brand before. He gets a victory over Jabba Askarov. That's a big time win. Like, that is a big time win. You know, I look at these Kunlun results, Kunlun 44, which is probably the 44th show they did this month because that's how many shows they put on. When I saw that result, I was like, okay. That is a big win for a guy who's moving in the right direction. Jabba Askarov can still beat a lot of guys. He can still stop a lot of guys. But there's a brand of young, up-and-coming kickboxers that's going to give him trouble. And he's been trying to do MMA and kickboxing both. He's making money for himself, fighting in Russia, fighting in China. This was a big win for Yacine Beitar. I'm excited for him, and I wish him all the best moving forward. Cedric Manhoff then went on to beat Clayton Enriquez from the Netherlands in that tournament final that I mentioned before. It was that's how they get down. They always throw the tournaments on Kunlun. So just want to go ahead and throw those results. I couldn't have been happier. Like, it really was a fun kickboxing weekend for me last weekend. Fun combat sports weekend for me. But I definitely wanted to bring those up. The aforementioned Alex Pereira gets a KO stoppage over Junior Alpha and WGP, it's the main kickboxing promotion in Brazil. It's got a lot of good stuff on there, but there were other results, but that's the main one that I wanted to bring up because he's still an elite fighter and Glory needs to bring him back. He needs to be fighting on that card that they have going down in July. They're going to be in, if I remember correctly, they're going to be in Virginia. So they'll be in Virginia. I'm hoping that he makes that card. I don't know what role. I know they've got the main event. I think it's going to be Varga and Adam and Chuck's, what I saw before. I think that's going to be the main event, but he's got to come back. He's one of the best kickboxers on the planet. He's one of the top 10 at, you know, that middleweight division. He's got to come back. So excited about him. Excited about the potential of kickboxing. He's going to get coming off that. You know, he also has a win over Israel Adesanya, who's just been absolutely murking people in MMA and kickboxing. But Alex Pierre is one of the best fighters in the world. He needs to be fighting for glory. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Longer show today. I apologize for that. But I was committed to getting that to full breakdown for those stadium folks. So love you all. God bless. Thank you for listening to my show. Peace.